Hey, Jon Favreau here. There's no shortage of political takes in 2024, but quantity doesn't cut it. We need a better conversation about the latest biggest election of our lives. On Pod Save America, me and my co-host cut through the noise to help you figure out what matters and how you can help. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, Pod Save America is breaking down the political news that makes us laugh, cry, and snap our laptops in half. Expensive year for laptops. Make sure to check out new episodes of Pod Save America on your favorite podcast platform or our YouTube channel now.
Hello and welcome to Why Is This Happening with me, your host, Chris Hayes. All right, with pod listeners, it is another special bonus episode. More bang for your buck this week, and by buck, I mean no bucks, because you don't pay for this. You just get it free in your ear holes every week. Isn't that delightful? So we've got a great little special update. It's the first time that we have done this, and it's something I think we want to do more of. We had an episode late last year with Dale Ho, who's the head of the ACLU Voting Rights Project, who is the person sort of running the litigation against the Commerce Department and the Trump administration over their plans to add a question to the 2020 census about people's citizenship. And it was an episode that was a kind of under the radar topic that I was really fascinated in and got a huge response from listeners, partly because the facts are so damning. Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, quite plainly has lied to Congress under oath about what he was up to. So we had Dale Ho on, and we had him on right before he was about to go to trial against the government in federal district court here in New York over whether this was allowed, whether the Trump administration essentially violated the law in the manner in which they attempted to add the citizenship question and lie about their motives for doing so. And so a lot of people have been saying, wait, what happened? The cliffhanger. We talked to him. He was about to go to trial. And then where did we end up on that? So today's episode is a where did we end up on that with Dale Ho back here in studio. In mid-January, the federal district judge in the case, Judge Furman, issued a almost 300-page decision in which the ACLU's arguments won almost on every point. Basically said the government acted improperly. It acted unreasonably. It attempted to conceal the facts. And no, you cannot do this. You cannot add your census question. This is wrong and illegal. It was a huge, huge win for the ACLU, a stunning defeat for the government. So we had Dale Ho to come back and explain what happened in the trial and what happens now. All right. Welcome back to the program, Dale Ho. You are our first repeat guest on With Pod.
It's an honor.
And it is literally backed by popular demand because we have gotten more requests for follow up on your episode than any other episode. And partly I think that's because it's a fascinating topic. I think people really, really, really responded to that first episode. But also it was in process when we talked. When you and I spoke, which was several months ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You are about to head into trial in which you are suing the Trump administration over their proposal to add a question about citizenship to the census.
Right.
The trial was set to start in federal district court.
Yeah.
And drum roll. And then the trial happened. Tell me what the trial was like.
It was a 2-week trial in federal court in Manhattan. We had kind of a parade of witnesses, mostly experts, including from the Census Bureau or political scientists, demographers, someone who works for the city of New York, to offer testimony about what it would mean to the census if you put this question on. What would happen? How many people would respond? How many people would not respond? What that would do to census data? What that might do to the apportionment of seats in the House? What that might do in terms of the allocation of federal funding? And what all these documents in the what's called the administrative record, the government's record of why they needed to do this, what they considered when they did this, what all these documents meant, what the recommendation of the Census Bureau actually was, and how ultimately the government's rationale just didn't make any sense.
So the key point here was, A, there was this tremendous push behind the scenes to add this citizenship question.
Yeah.
That's clear in the record.
Right.
B, they lied about it repeatedly.
Right.
C, they're clearly doing it because they think it will have an effect, at least from top down, the Steve Bannon, who was one of the people behind this, Wilbur Ross, people in the White House,
mm-hmm.
because they think it will depress response levels by immigrant and immigrant adjacent communities.
Correct.
That will then mean that they will be undercounted, which will have huge effects for apportionment and federal dollar allocation for those communities.
Right.
Okay. So that's your case, right?
Yes.
Those are the three prongs of your case.
Yeah.
So the big thing from a legal perspective is the White House, the federal government, the Census Bureau, the Commerce Secretary, all those people do have the statutory power to add a citizenship question to the census, don't they?
Well, that's not really a question that ever came up in the litigation, right? Whether or not there is any kind of inherent power to allow the secretary to do this. You know, Congress, under the Constitution, has the authority to conduct the census. It's been delegated to the Secretary of Commerce.
Right, because it's in the Constitution, as we spoke about last time.
Right. And that delegation to the Secretary of Commerce is subject to certain legal requirements. There's a Census Act, which puts limitations on what the Commerce Secretary can and can't do. And then there's also something called the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, which governs all executive branch agencies. And it requires that you be truthful about the reasons why you do something. It requires that you make decisions that are consistent with the evidence that's presented to you and that you consider all relevant factors when making a decision.
Yeah. So what the law says is you have to have a process and rationale. I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but basically says the Small Business Administration cannot announce tomorrow that every small business owner with blue eyes is no longer eligible for a loan. Just couldn't do it. It's not because it would violate like civil rights law, because they're not blue eyed people aren't a protected class right under civil rights law. It's just that it's nonsensical. Like, you just can't do it. And you have to have a process and reasons for your decision. I mean, that's basically what this case came down to.
That's right. And you have to document the process and reasons. Right.
And you can't lie about that.
You can't lie about it. And the fact that they claim to document the public reason for it, which was to enforce the Voting Rights Act, but that there was no evidence to support it, suggests that, in fact, they had a different reason, one that they didn't want to make public, that they're not announcing, and that they lied.
I guess what I'm trying to say here is you had a kind of a high bar, and it's a fairly extraordinary set of circumstances to have a federal trial in which the plaintiffs in your case are basically saying, you can't do this because you just made this shit up and are lying about it.
Right.
And the judge says, you're right. They just made that shit up and lied about it, which is basically what the decision from the district court was, right?
That's right. It is a high, and it is a high bar, because it's not like, you know, we can't just prove that it would be better to do something else other than ask a citizenship question. At the end of the day, we didn't have an argument about discrimination on the basis of a protected characteristic like race. At the end of the day, it was all about whether or not what the government had done was reasonable. And that's usually a pretty easy bar for the government to clear. But the facts here were pretty extraordinary.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That usually the government has to get over the reasonable bar.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of usually a kind of pro forma thing in most governments to show, we dotted our I's, we crossed our T's, we thought through this, we circulated some memos, we crunched some numbers. And in this case, a federal judge, after a 2-week trial, says, like, no, this was not reasonable.
Right.
What was the decision like?
So there are a few different bases for the decision. It's long and complicated, 277 pages, you know.
I definitely downloaded it and was like, I should read this. I'll just leave it there.
But all right. Fair enough.
Whether we got through the whole thing.
Fair enough. The judge's ruling boiled down to, I think, four basic points. First, that it was contrary to law. By that, I mean provisions of the Census Act, which require decisions to be announced at a particular time and data to be gathered in a way that doesn't harm the quality of the census count. Second, that they made a decision that was contrary to the evidence before Secretary Ross, including evidence that it would reduce participation in the census, which Secretary Ross misrepresented. Third, that they didn't go through the normal procedures that the Census Bureau usually goes through, which includes testing questions to make sure that they don't have that kind of effect. And fourth, that they lied about the reason why they did it, that it was pretextual.
That's a total win.
Well, we won on all of those arguments, so we're happy about that. You know, I mean, we also brought an argument that this was intended to discriminate on the basis of race and ethnicity, and the court ruled that there wasn't any evidence, enough evidence, rather, to support that, in part because we never got to take that deposition of Wilbur Ross.
So that brings us to a very weird, really strange procedural tangle that happened with this case that my wife, my beloved, brilliant lawyer wife, Kay Chaw, who's been a guest on the podcast, had to sort of explain to me, and I still kind of only half get. So you're doing this trial, and in the run-up to the trial, you're deposing various people.
Yeah.
One of the people you want to depose is the Commerce Secretary himself, Wilbur Ross, and the government says what?
The government says there's no basis to take any depositions at all, first of all. Second of all, there's no basis to take a deposition of a high-ranking government official, particularly a cabinet secretary. You have to clear a very high bar. And they're right about that. You do have to clear a very high bar. It's not every day that a Senate-confirmed cabinet secretary has to give a deposition in civil litigation. We thought the facts here were extraordinary and warranted that because of his false testimony in Congress on multiple occasions.
I mean, he lied to Congress quite plainly.
He told Congress when asked, did you have any conversations with the White House about this? He said, I'm not aware of any such. That's the direct quote of what he said. When in fact, the record shows he talked to Steve Bannon, who was then the chief political advisor, and that Bannon directed him to talk to Kris Kobach, who was the vice chair of President Trump's Election Integrity Commission. He said that the Department of Justice initiated the process, that he was responding solely to the Department of Justice, when in fact he had apparently made his decision months before the Department of Justice had ever gotten involved. So these are blatant lies.
And so you said, look, it's extraordinary. He's blatantly lied. And we right. think that crosses the, we admit, very high bar of deposing a cabinet
yes.
secretary. The Department of Justice, the Trump administration says no.
Right.
And then your trial judge, Judge Furman, right, who's the one who makes the call on this,
mm-hmm.
says, well,
yes.
Says yes, you can depose him.
It's a very high bar. This is a very serious matter. I take this really, really seriously and do not say this lightly, but you can depose him because of what look like false representations. The first appeals court to hear it affirms it unanimously.
So the first 3-0. Appeal court says, yes, you're right, you yeah. can depose him.
Right, 3-0. And then the Supreme Court steps in, stops the deposition before it happens, issues what's called a stay. And then grants.
This is all while the what's so weird about this. So while you're preparing for this trial,
right.
this question of deposition is going up through the appellate process,
yes.
right? So there are three levels in the federal courts.
Yeah.
There's the district court, which is your trial judge.
Mm-hmm.
He said yes. There's appellate courts, which is the circuit courts. They say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Supreme Court comes in and says, call it off.
Right.
Hit a pause. And then we will grant cert and have formal arguments
yeah.
about whether you could depose the Commerce Secretary.
Yes. Very unusual.
Crazy.
Very unusual for the Supreme Court to get involved in a discovery dispute about who can be deposed.
And not only very unusual, it's also this bizarre calendar thing.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have the trial.
Right.
And the Supreme Court is like, in several months, let's have some arguments on this.
Yeah, exactly, right? When,
like,
you know,
well,
exactly. How are we going to—
You can't go back in time.
Right, right. So even, I mean, you know, in some world in which the Supreme Court wanted to hear the argument on that in order to bless us, right, and say, yes, you may, in fact, take Wilbur Ross's deposition. I mean, it would have happened too late. I mean, the trial happened in November and oral argument on this was scheduled for February. So
it's just, I want to pause here because it's a really weird thing
weird.
For the Supreme Court to do.
Yeah.
To say the trial happened in November. This is a really interesting matter that we are going to grant, which is, again, the Supreme Court grants what's called cert on less than 1%, I think, of the petitions, maybe, I mean, a tiny minuscule amount. So it's a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, 4 months after the trial, we'll take arguments about whether he can be deposed. You just had the trial without his deposition.
Right.
And you won.
Right.
As soon as you win, the Supreme Court says what?
We're not going to have oral argument on this anymore.
It's
right.
like, well, so duh.
Why did they grant it in the first place?
Like everyone,
yeah.
like all you had to do was pull up your Google Calendar as a layperson to be like, this doesn't really make a lot of sense, right?
I'm not sure they have Google Calendar. The justices use Google Calendar.
It was super strange.
To sync up all their calendars, all nine of them with each other. That'd be pretty funny. It was very bizarre. It was hard to understand exactly what it was they were wanting to do there.
Yeah.
From our perspective, you know, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. We won the case at the trial level. We didn't get to take Wilbur Ross's deposition, which is unfortunate. He will be testifying in Congress in March in the House Oversight Committee chaired by Congressman Elijah Cummings.
Oh,
so
wow.
That'll be interesting. So we'll see what he has to say at that point. But now this case will proceed on appeal without his testimony.
Okay, so you won at the district mm-hmm. level. The question of the deposition has kind of been rendered moot by said victory.
That's our view. I can't see how it isn't moot, but
right.
the government may have a different view.
And then now the government has already filed an appeal of the trial court, district court's decision in your favor.
That's right. They filed an appeal. They're trying to expedite that and get that heard this spring. Simultaneously, they're also trying to circumvent the same court in which they filed an appeal. They've told us and they've made clear in a public filing that they're going to also ask the Supreme Court to bypass the intermediate appellate court, something that this administration has done a number of times, for instance, in the DACA litigation, in the transgender military ban, just asking to just skip the normal appellate process and have the Supreme Court review trial court decisions.
That is a very strange thing.
Yes.
It's extremely out of the ordinary.
Yes.
People that practice federal appellate litigation.
Right.
It's sacrosanct. It's the Stations of the Cross. It's the thing you do. I mean, like I said, there's three levels. You got the district court, you got the appellate court, you got the Supreme Court. Supreme Court got a lot on their plate.
Yeah.
You don't muck around with the Supreme Court. Like, they take a very tiny percentage of cases because most cases can be handled at lower levels.
Right.
And this administration has routinely and almost systematically done this very strange thing, which pisses off a lot of judges.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's part of the reason you don't do it.
Right.
Which is to say, we're not going to go to the appellate court. We want SCOTUS right now.
Right. And it's obviously a calculation on the part of this administration that they think they have five friends up there who are going to side with them pretty much regardless of the issue or what they want to do.
It is extremely revealing, right? I mean, that is the widespread assumption about them taking these extraordinary steps quite often in a way that is am I wrong that it's a thing that people in your world have noted as bizarre?
Yes. That's right.
It's like, what are these guys up to?
Yeah. And they haven't been successful so far. They haven't gotten the Supreme Court to bite and take one of these cases directly from a district court and skip the Court of Appeals. But, you know, the concern is they've kind of normalized this as something to ask for and that sooner or later they'll hit on something.
So right now they're simultaneously doing both those things. They filed for an appeal in what would be the Second Circuit.
Yeah.
Which is
covers
New York.
Right.
And then they have also, what's the name of the filing when they try to skip an appellate
court? It's called a cert before judgment.
Huh. Cert before judgment. Okay.
Right.
So they're trying to get a cert before judgment for the Supreme Court.
Right.
The schedule that this will all work its way through and be hopefully resolved one way or the other has to be fairly expedited because there's a lot of planning that goes in the census, right?
Right. The Census Bureau has said that, you know, if they get a decision by June 30th, they can implement that easily. They've said that if they get it by September, it would cause some challenges for the Bureau, but they could still do it. And the Bureau has said that after that, it becomes a real, real significant problem that they would need potentially a larger appropriation from Congress to do something. So the administration, I'm sure, is going to argue that June 30th is a hard deadline. I'm not sure that that's right, but that's what I expect them to argue. And they're going to try to get one of these courts, either the Second Circuit or the Supreme Court, to hear argument in April and issue a decision before June 30th. That's their plan.
The record of the trial is the thing that everything's operating off of, correct?
Yes, and the record of materials that were before, it's kind of like meta records, right? They have the record that was before Secretary Ross, and then you have the trial record, which has some additional information in it that obviously, you know, some stuff, for instance, that didn't exist.
Like the government can't be like, here's a new witness who says this, right?
No.
Right, yeah.
No.
I just want to be clear. Like the facts have been determined.
Right.
And there's a factual record. And then now there are questions of law that will be presented to the appellate court and then possibly the Supreme Court.
Right. Can I say something about some of the factual record here that we didn't have before we talked last time?
Please,
that came out during the trial?
Yeah.
You know, I probably should have started here because the numbers are kind of eye-popping. We got the Census Bureau's latest projection for what the effect of the question would be in the trial record. It wasn't in the administrative record, but one of the questions the judge had to resolve and wasn't limited to the record before Secretary Ross to resolve this question is, what is this going to do to the states that are challenging this? What is this question going to do? And the Census Bureau's best estimate was 6.5 million people do not respond to the census as a result of this question. That might not sound like a lot of people, but you put them all together.
It sounds like a lot of people to me.
Okay. Well, you put them all together, that's our 18th largest state. If they were one state, they'd have 9 seats in Congress and 11 votes in the Electoral College. Now, just to put things in perspective, the last time the Supreme Court heard a case about the census, it was over a counting procedure which changed the total count 0.4 percentage points. That counting procedure caused Utah to lose a House seat and North Carolina to gain one. So that was after the 2000 census. These numbers are much, much bigger than that, right? The trial judge found that it was likely that California, New York, Arizona, and Texas would all lose seats in the House. Those states and others would lose a lot of federal dollars in terms of CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, Medicaid, SNAP, sometimes called food stamps, WIC, a nutritional program for women, infants, and children, newborns. This question, if it is on the census will have a massive, massive effect in terms of the distribution of political power and federal dollars.
And that is the finding of this trial court.
Yes.
That's new. I mean, that is now like certified, right?
Yes.
In some sort of official way by Judge Furman.
Right.
So, I mean, this sounds like it's going to end up before the Supreme Court. Are you grimacing because you feel like you can't count to five? Or
well, I can always I can count a lot higher than five. I have two school age children, so I do a lot of math.
Am I using that phrase correctly?
You are.
Yeah, it's like that's like a Supreme Court phrase.
Yeah,
about can you count to five? Meaning like, is there a majority there for you to persuade?
Right, and I think you know. Speaking not as the lawyer in this case, but just as a court watcher and a litigator and someone who works in civil rights, generally, I think pretty much my entire career as a lawyer, people have been in my line of work, people who do civil rights work, have not sort of been chomping at the bit to get to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And the court has only grown more conservative over the years since I've been a practicing lawyer. And, you know, anytime the Supreme Court says, I want to take your case, to someone in my line of work, we always kind of have to like take a deep breath and think hard about what that's, you know, going to mean. It's a case of national importance. It's possible that the Supreme Court takes it. It's also possible that the Second Circuit hears this case this spring. And if the census forms start getting printed in the summer, maybe they're the last word in the case, but it's tough.
You got your work cut out for you still.
Either way, I mean, you know, even though we have a great record, as you pointed out at the top of the show, showing that the government did something unreasonable is a very high bar.
Yeah.
And this, I think, more than clears it, but it's always, I think, an uphill battle in these kinds of cases.
Dale Ho is the director of the ACLU Voting Rights Project. He is directing the litigation over the census question for the ACLU. You were the, you argued the trial, right? I mean,
I cross-examined the government's key witness, the chief scientist of the Census Bureau, which is, you know, he's the government's only witness about the Census Bureau's analysis of the case.
Did you make him cry? Is there like a Perry Mason breakdown moment?
media reported, I was so kind of locked in during the trial, so I didn't actually observe it myself, but media reported and in the trial judge's opinion, it's noted that he did tear up at one point on the stand.
Oh, wow. I was sort of joking, but I guess he really did make him cry.
He teared up at one point. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm going to go look at those media reports. Dale, thank you so much. And thanks to all the listeners for all your interest and for asking us to do this. I guess one more question, because a lot of people wrote about this. Dozens of people wrote in to say they were very upset about what the government was doing. Mm. They wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, well, what if we all left the question blank?
Right.
The citizenship question as a kind of act of solidarity, no confidence, et cetera, if it were to actually appear on the census.
Right.
What do you think of that?
I think it's not a good idea. First of all, people are by law required to respond to the census and give a fulsome response. Of course, in every census, people don't respond at all or skip some questions. If you do that, you've basically let them win. If you don't get counted at all, like if you don't respond to the census, and if you don't respond to the citizenship question, then they're going to make up a number for you. They're going to use that number to justify however they decide to influence the drawing of district lines at every level of government, Congress, state legislature, city and county. It's important to get as accurate a count as possible if that question ends up being on the census. So I wouldn't recommend anyone not to answer a question on the census.
All right. Well, thank you for answering that. Thanks to all the WithPod listeners for asking it.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dale.
Thanks a lot for having me back.
Once again, my great thanks to Dale Ho for coming back and doing this special bonus sequel episode. As always, we love to hear from you. There are two ways to get in touch with us. You can tweet at us using the hashtag WithPod or email us at withpod@gmail.com. Your emails really do drive the show. We did this episode because so many of you reached out and told us that you were dying to have Dale back, and so we had him back. Why Is This Happening is brought to you by MSNBC and NBC News, produced by the All In team and features music by Eddie Cooper. For transcripts, more episodes, and links to things we covered here, you can go to nbcnews.com/whyisthishappening.
It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life. Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.